Hey there, welcome to another episode of the Envision podcast. My name is Karthik and I will be your host for today's episode. On this podcast, we bring together people who have a positive impact on the blind and visually impaired community from across the world and share their stories with you. Today on our podcast, we bring you Amir Rahimi, a natural born storyteller. Although he once planned on being a patent lawyer, however, he decided to change tracks and become a comedian instead. Today, he spends his time making people laugh and working at the American Foundation for the Blind, making workplaces more inclusive and accessible. So without further ado, let's begin. Welcome, Amir. It's a pleasure to have you here with us today.
It's a pleasure to be here. Karthik, am I pronouncing it correctly?
Oh, yes, it is. You're pronouncing it perfectly fine.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to be on your podcast and learn a little bit about you and share my story as well. So thanks for having me.
Awesome. So we usually start the podcast with going back to the very early years of the people that we're talking to, because I often see that, you know, those years have a huge impact on their life growing up. So, you know, talk to us about your early days growing up and who were the people who had the most influence, you know, as you were growing up, and how did that shape your life?
Absolutely. That's a great question. I feel like I've had such a long life. I have to kind of like go back. But so I was originally born in Iran, Tehran. When I was younger, I was a very hyperactive kid, and I was running around. I was breaking my bones a lot. And I would just have, like, I would fall. A twisted ankle would be a really bad fracture. And the doctors couldn't really figure that out, what was going on with me. I was just breaking my bones left and right. And so I ended up, through a recommendation from some doctors, I ended up coming to the United States to be studied at the NIH here. And it was back in, you know, the 90s when, you know, I was like, you know, I came here when I was about 7 years old. And I came here and, you know, they did some, you know, research and studying on me. And they found out that I had this disorder called osteogenesis imperfecta, which is also known as brittle bone disease. So your body doesn't produce enough collagen. And that's what was happening with me. My bones were more brittle than other people's. So I would fall and I would have just these crazy fractures. And, you know, I had rods, you know, overall in my life, I've had over 50 fractures. So that's kind of how I ended up, you know, here in the States and just growing up here and trying to assimilate in the, you know, the US culture. And it was a little easier for me younger, but kind of to fast forward, back in 2009, I was getting ready to go out in the morning, and I was getting ready, and I had this, you know, collision in my room where like my eye ended up colliding with this object in my room, and I ended up losing most of my vision. It was a random fall / injury in my room, and I ended up rupturing my cornea, and I had tons of surgeries. And I ended up, you know, losing most of my vision. The other eye was affected because your eye is an open system. Apparently I didn't know that, but, and that's when I lost my vision. I had a couple of years where I was just, you know, really depressed and wasn't doing anything with my life. Which a lot of people go through. If you've gone blind later in life, you lose your vision and it's hard to let go. And once that happened for me, I had this whole spiral a couple of years of being depressed and just not wanting to do anything in my life. But, you know, finally, I was able to get some help through the organization that I'm with right now, American Foundation for the Blind. They were actually the first organization to help me. Like, my brother went on this website, their website, randomly. We're trying to find something to see if they can help me. And they had this mentorship program called Career Connect. And, you know, I signed up and I was paired with this mentor, and he, you know, this guy was amazing. He was an accomplished blind lawyer, and he just showed me the way. And he's the first person who shaped my life. You know, his name was Jim McCarthy, and I talked to him a few, you know, over the phone, and I saw that blind people can accomplish things. They can live on their own. They can have a happy life. And that kind of gave me the inspiration. And then when I got involved in the blindness community, you know, after I did a 1 year training program, it was a sleep study training program where I learned everything that I needed, you know, from cane travel to technology, you know, to Braille, you name it, independent living. So, you know, as I got more involved in the blindness community, I started meeting some amazing blind people, people who were, you know, doing really, really cool things, whether they were in the science field, in the research field, you know, psychologists, psychiatrists, anything you may name it, lawyers. And, you know, those people really shaped me. And you know, I just started, you know, meeting so many people, and they mentored me. And, you know, combine that with my training, that really helped shape me to the person who I am today, you know, which is someone who is okay with their blindness and who's trying to, you know, just live their best life and try to help some people on the way.
Really interesting. And, you know, I wanted to go back a bit and talk about, when did being a lawyer factor into this whole phase of your life? You know, was it because your mentor was a lawyer, or was it other people around you? And what led you to that field? You know, we're really, really curious.
That's a great question. And I mentor a lot of people, and I tell them that my wanting to become a lawyer. I'm not a lawyer at the moment. But the thing is, so when I started getting my, you know, I guess my blindness, you know, starting to get a little under control, I saw there was a lot of blind lawyers, right? And I, you know, you see in the movies, you watch like Daredevil, he's like the superhero who's blind and he's a lawyer. And, you know, you just see a lot of blind lawyers. And I was like, you know what, I guess I'll be a blind lawyer. You know, I'll be a lawyer because that's what lawyers can do. I mean, that's not what lawyers do. That's what blind people do. They become lawyers, you know? And I was just like, well, I guess I'll do that. And you know, I was just kind of like, I started studying for it. And then I didn't really have any direction. I didn't really have much mentorship, honestly. But then when I started getting involved in different blindness organizations, like the AFB, the NFB, and some of the other ones, and just meeting these amazing individuals, people like I talked about, I was like, well, hold on, I don't really have to be a lawyer, you know? yes, there are some amazing accomplished blind lawyers, but they actually love being lawyers and they love the law. And it's just, you know, I appreciate the law, you know, it helps me, you know, it keeps me safe and, you know, protects my rights, but I don't necessarily want to be, you know, fully involved and invested in it. So I started doing like research. I was like, what do I really want to do with my life? You know, I decided to put a pause on going to law school. I was like, before I commit to this, I'm going to really find out what I want to do and what I can do. Because after meeting all those amazing people, I was like, I can do whatever I want, you know? So I started like doing research on, I was like, what am I good at? You know, I'm good at talking to people. I enjoy writing. I enjoy building relationship with people. I can easily just, you know, make friends and communicate. So I started looking those positive qualities that I have and looking to see how I can incorporate that into a career. And I saw, oh, like PR, public relations is like exactly what I would be good at, you know? So I started, you know, doing some research, and that's when I really, you know, when I started reading about it, I met some people in PR, both blind and sighted. And then I was like, wow, this is it for me. So I started, you know, I decided to go to grad school at GW and study and get my master's in strategic PR.
Wow. So, I mean, that's also a really interesting turn to the story. And, you know, when you're working in PR, this is a question that I also do ask a lot of people that I talk to, because the other day I was talking to a blind chemist and he was talking about how he made chemistry really accessible by 3D printing, you know, all the equations that he was working on or all the molecules that he was working on, so he could feel them and, you know, make and move forward. So at every single point, I do come across blind or visually impaired people who take up mainstream careers. And then they really go ahead and break a few barriers and open up a few areas because they're being very creative about how to overcome the obstacles in their particular professional space, right? And I want to understand how you did that with PR, because I'm assuming that, you know, PR is also something that's somewhat visually driven. It's a bit like that. And I want to understand, you know, how did you really, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's another great question. So, you know, when I was going into PR, you know, I was just like, you know, like that's, I knew that PR was pretty, you know, it was a very diverse field. So there's a lot of different branches that you can kind of hold on to and climb and see where you get to, you know, whether you want to do branding, crisis management, just, you know, straight up do communications. So that's what one of the things that intrigued me. But I also, you know, I was definitely it was interesting because I did my first internship at this PR agency, and I learned so much, right? It was this worldwide, PR firm, and it was this really cool internship in DC, and I did it, and I was just like, you know, I went to this, they had hundreds of people working in this building, and I was the only blind person there, right? I didn't even meet any other person, honestly, with a disability, not that I knew of. And I'm not gonna lie, I felt very out of place in the beginning, you know, especially, you know, I was, you know, kind of young in my career, and I was just like, is this really for me? Like, you know, and there was a lot of visual stuff that we were working on that was not fully accessible to me, right? Whether we were working on a campaign where, you know, there was a lot of, you know, art and storytelling through pictures, right? I was like, am I really gonna fit in this space? Like, you know, we're doing this campaign for Ralph Lauren, and you know, I can't really contribute to this aspect of it because I can't, you know, exactly see. And I was also very timid, as, you know, a newly blind person. And I was afraid to advocate for myself and ask for help. Like, hey, I can't really see what's going on here. Can you explain to me? I'm a part of this team. We're working on this campaign. Can you really, really, you know, describe to me what's going on? What does this ad look like that we're working on? Right. And so I wasn't doing that. And I was, you know, definitely, you know, struggling to find my voice. And is this really for me? But, after I left the PR firm, I decided to, this opportunity came up at the American Association of People with Disabilities, AAPD. They're a pretty well-known disability organization. And, you know, over there, I was the digital and communications intern. And I had a different experience because, you know, I started working on campaigns, you know, that were, for disability community, you know, whether it was advocacy or anything else that we were working on. But, you know, a lot of the campaigns that we work on, we would make sure that it's accessible for people because our target audience is not only mainstream media, but also mainstream people, but also the disability community. So we have to make sure it's accessible, right? So while we were doing that, I noticed that things became accessible for me. And I learned what it meant to advocate for myself. You know, hey, I need, you know, I'd like to, you know, design this campaign, but I need someone to maybe help me, you know, put together the visuals. And I also need someone to describe it to me to see what it looks like. And then, you know, I learned what it meant to like put all text under something. So as a description for blind and low vision people. So then, you know, when I did that, you know, learning what accessibility means, right? And that's what you all work on. So I'm sure you know all about it. Like, that actually made me think that I can actually do something in the PR and communications, field, you know. And then, you know, while I was in grad school, and that's when I really fell in love with the disability community. I was in grad school, and you know, a job opened up at a disability organization here in Arlington, Virginia, and as the communications manager. So I took that, and that's when I really started to, you know, feel like I can do this, right? You know, like I can definitely, you know, work around, you know, some of the visual stuff, but not only making it accessible for myself, but for other people.
Really interesting. So the organization made a difference here, and the causes that they were picking up actually made a difference. You could say that in a way, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it definitely does, because when you work for a disability organization, they're aware of the whole accommodation and accessibility field. And that's the thing. So, you know, a lot of people, they work in the, you know, like me, you know, they're young, and that company that I was interning for may have given me the, you know, the accommodations and what I needed, but I just didn't even know what I should be asking for. You know, I didn't know that I had to advocate for myself. I didn't know how to do that, you know, cause that, and that's what a lot of companies right now deal with, you know, overall, you know, like private corporations, not disability driven. They're not educated enough to know that someone who they hired is blind or, you know, deaf, or any other part of the disability community, what do we need to provide this person so that they can maximize their effort and be able to be an asset to this company or organization? So, you know, that's definitely something that people, you know, still struggle with today. And that's why, you know, I love working here at AFB, because, you know, we work with, you know, we have a whole consulting side where we actually work with, you know, companies to, you know, make sure that, you know, what they provide, not only their software and their websites and everything else accessible, but also, you know, we work and we make sure that, you know, they know how to best, you know, support their employees, you know. Hey, what is it that they need, you know, to be able to, you know, thrive. So, you know, and that's why I really love working in the disability and blindness field.
And if you would, you know, talk about one particular, thing an organization can do, I mean, I of course understand that, you know, making a workplace accessible is a combination of so many things, but, you know, where do you think organizations big and small can start with if they're really looking to bring a more accessible and inclusive workplace, right? I mean, this is a question because you've been so involved in this space. And like you said, you're doing consulting work for different companies. I'm curious to understand where companies can start from, you know, for all the people who are listening, who might be working in these organizations, how could they start a conversation, or where could they actually start with making the workplace more inclusive?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. So to make it, to be able to make it inclusive, one is not to be able to afraid to have that discussion, right? Start, you know, having the discussion with your employees, right? Maybe create a safe space for people who have disabilities to speak with their hiring managers and also their supervisors, you know, like build a space where people are not afraid to express what they want, you know, if they need help, you know, kind of promote that idea. Hey, how can we be more accommodating to be more accessible? Because when I was younger, I was like afraid to even ask for it because, you know, I felt like, am I burdening my supervisor, my boss, or am I, you know, maybe I shouldn't be asked, maybe I'll lose my job, right? So that's number one, just have an environment where like people are not, you know, intimidated to go and seek help and ask for accommodation. And that just like, hey, how can I work with you to make sure, you know, you can, you know, be more comfortable, you know, doing X, Y, Z, you know, whether it's working on a spreadsheet or uploading these files or, you know, whatever, how can we make this more accessible? And one, having that dialogue, and then two, you know, educating yourself, right? You know, well, you can definitely be educated by your employees. And I think that's a good place to start. But also, you know, reaching out to organizations like, you know, whether it's AFB, you know, we do our consulting, but any other, you know, organization that can kind of come in and teach you, hey, this is what it means. This is what people with disabilities can do. For example, people who are blind, they can use screen readers. They can, use JAWS. They can use Zoom text, whatever they need. These are some of the things available to blind people. Here's how you can make PDFs more accessible for people who are blind and low vision. Right now, I'm just focusing on blindness community, but, you know, there's so many other disabilities that need accommodating as well. But what kind of documents are more accessible for people who are blind? What are some softwares that are out there? You know, maybe have like a training session for like the entire company. Have an organization come or someone who's an expert come and just discuss, hey, what's out there? What is it that blind people use to be able to be as efficient as possible? Here are some softwares that they use. Just to educate. And I think it's not only great for, you know, supervisors and hiring managers to learn this, but like even just, you know, the colleagues, so they can kind of learn, oh, you know, this is what my colleague uses, my coworker uses who's visually impaired or blind. That's pretty cool. And let me see how, if I'm going to email him a document, I mean, make sure it's accessible for him, right? So, you know, and that's definitely something that I dealt with, you know. We're doing a webinar today for the entire company. How do we make sure that, you know, the individual who is blind can also get as much information out of this webinar as everybody else, right? And that's when you want to, you know, reach out to the disability community, see who's an expert, you know? So, and, you know, just learn from them.
Right. So I think, like, you know, when I speak to organizations that are not really in this space, I think for them, the biggest problem seems to always come from awareness that, oh, you know what, there are possibilities for blind or visually impaired people to be able to work just like everyone else today in the mainstream, you know, in mainstream career. So I think, like it definitely helps to start having that conversation first and then, you know, eventually progress to reaching out to organizations that can help and so on. Amidst all of this stuff, where did stand-up comedy come from? You know, you've been working through all of this, this great stuff and helping other organizations, you know, work with accessibility better and all that stuff. And, you know, the whole thing with the stand-up comedy thing seems a bit tangential in a sense, but it's also really, really interesting. I think what makes you a really interesting person to talk to, right? So where did that come from? And talk to us a little bit about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's interesting. I always, you know, I'm always the, you know, the guy in the room who is, you know, just making observations, you know, with friends or family and just, you know, cracking jokes and just coming up with, I don't know, observations, things that are funny, or like, you know, I've always been a really good storyteller, you know, kind of just people, you know, would come around me and I'd be telling a story, like something that's not even that interesting. I used to always, you know, that's something that happened to me, you know, earlier in the day, you know, whether it's just a random conversation I had with a stranger that maybe it's not that funny, but I, for some reason, I was just, the way I would be saying it, I noticed people would be laughing, you know? And I that was just kind of like early on in life. And I had always, people would tell me, Amir, go and do stand-up comedy. And I was just like, no, man, I just like to be, you know, funny and make people laugh. And so I never did it. And, you know, I think one of the biggest things was I was just always afraid to get on stage, you know, also because I'm just, man, like, I don't want to go, you know, if I say something funny in front of my friends, you know, I don't, you know, they'll laugh or maybe they won't laugh, but, you know, I'm not in front of a bunch of strangers trying to make them laugh. And I just never did it. And I think just going through everything I've gone through in the last 11 years has kind of like shifted my mindset, right? And I don't know, it was just like a few years ago, I was just like, I've always been a huge fan of stand-up comedy. I had people like to sit on Netflix and Amazon and watch movies and shows. I always look for what stand-up have I not seen, and I feel like I've seen most of them, you know. I love going to stand-up shows, you know, just, you know, going to small comedy clubs and just sitting and just checking out even the local talent. And you know, that I was always into that. And I don't know, just, it was a few years ago where I was just like, I need to do something else in my life besides working, right? So I decided, I found this class in here in DC. You know, the improv comedy place here, DC Improv, they do classes. So I just signed up for it. And I remember I went in and I did a couple classes and I was like, this is amazing. And I started, you know, doing it. And then, you know, me and my classmates, we started going to different open mics and doing stand-ups. And I just got really, really into it. And like, I would come home after my classes and I would just sit and think about jokes to write. And I would just, you know, walk around like a lunatic in my room, just like, you know, you know, like just speaking into my phone or just recording it or just walking, you know, speaking in front of a mirror and just keep practicing it. Like, how can I make this funnier? How can I make this funnier? Calling my friends and doing a bit, you know, and then seeing how I can make it better. And I was just really, really into it. And I was like, wow, I'm really passionate about this. And I had never been passionate about anything, honestly. Like, besides, I mean, that's what I'm talking about, hobbies. Like, I do have, you know, I love helping the disability community in my work, but like a hobby, people used to tell me, do you have a hobby? And I was just like, you know, does watching football count as a hobby? I don't know. So I really got into it. And then, you know, I remember we did our graduation and I went and did stand up in front of like a bunch of my friends who came and, you know, this packed comedy club. And I landed, you know, my first punchline and the room started laughing, you know, and I was like, wow, this is a life for me. And I've never been happier doing anything, you know, as far as for recreation. And then I started going to different comedy clubs and doing 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there. And that's just, you know, where I fell in love with it. And it's just, it goes back to storytelling for me. You know, I just love to tell stories, whether it's, you know, for work or for fun, you know, on stage. So that's a little how I got into it.
Nice. And, you know, when we talk about stand-up comedians, they have different genres they go after, mm-hmm. right? Some people go after politics, some people go after, you know, other things. What's your genre like, you know, and why do you say, how do you think your comedy is really trying to humanize blindness in a way, right? That's something that I keep, you know, hearing about you in the sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't know about my genre. I'm really into misdirection. So I just love telling a story and get people like emotionally invested into it. And then just like all of a sudden take a huge left turn and just, you know, drop like this, you know, a bombshell out of nowhere, you know? So like, you know, like what I'm sure you've heard some of my stand-up, you know, it's just like, you know, I'm telling a story about, you know, I meet this random stranger and they're asking me, you know, a question about, hey, are you like an inspiration or whatever? And then it's just getting really like hot and heavy. And then all of a sudden I just say something crazy on stage, you know, and the crowd is like, wow, where did that come from? And for me, as far as humanizing blindness, so I really wanted, and I wasn't planning into this, but when I started doing my classes and doing these things, I decided that I've always been about, you know, in the blindness field, I want to make sure that blind people are seen as the confident, capable people that they are, right? Because I'm sure you know about, you know, the unemployment rate in the blindness community, right? 7 out of 10 people are unemployed. And why is that? Because people have low expectations of blind people, right? They don't believe that blind people are capable of doing anything a lot of times, you know? So that's why I was like, you know what? If I'm going to do this, if I go on stage, I have a cane in my hand, I have to come up as a capable blind person, number one. And I also have to show that, hey, blind people can be funny. Blind people can be quirky. They can be goofy and they can be, you know, say messed up things on stage. But I wanted to make sure that, you know, I humanize a blind person, you know, like I'm just normal like you, I'm on stage, I'm telling crazy stories, but I wanted to make sure that I come off very, very confident, which I did try to do in my daily life anyways, but on stage, I wanted to make sure, and I just wanted to make sure that, you know, any kind of storytelling that I do, it's to lift blind people up and not bring them down, right? So I'm not about saying these, you know, jokes that are like low hanging fruits to like, you know, like, make people with disposable or blind people look less than they are. You know, maybe it's funny to people who are mainstream, but I'm not about that. If I'm telling a story about my blindness or about my experiences, it's going to be funny, but it's going to be funny because it's a random experience and it's a random story, not because I'm going to be like, oh, like I was walking today and I ran into a wall, ha ha ha, you know, like, which I know people like to, you know, say, I've seen people who are cited, you know, make fun of blind people. And I've seen blind people make fun of themselves in a negative way as well. So I'm all about humanizing blind people and just trying to make them look capable and confident.
And that's actually, you know, really important as well, because if we as a society need to be more inclusive, I think we need, you know, people from all walks of life, not just in certain kinds of professions or in mainstream careers, but even in the arts as well, right? Like the more inclusiveness you have in the arts, you really broadens your perspective on things, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. No, 100%. And I feel like as a blind person, I need to put my best foot forward into everything I do, whether it's, you know, I'm at a restaurant or I'm at, you know, work, doing my job, or, you know, I'm outside walking in the street, or I'm doing stand-up comedy, I need to show people that blind individuals can achieve anything they want. Because if I'm on stage and I don't know, there might be a hiring manager sitting in stage, and who knows, the next day he might be interviewing a blind person, right? And I wanted to see that, hey, blind people are cool, blind people are funny, and blind people can get the job done. That's really important to me.
Right. Yeah. No. I think it makes it makes a lot of difference when you know when you look at yourself as a bit of a spokesperson for a community and try to always put your best foot forward. It does end up having a huge ripple effect on everyone around you. I think you know we usually end this podcast with a question that I ask all my guests, and the question that I ask is, what is your guiding principle in life, Amir? You know, if there was one mantra that you want to share with the audience, what would that be?
What is my mantra in life? Wow, that's deep. I think my mantra in life, it would be to help others and create opportunities. So that's my mantra in life currently, and it's because of everything I've been through over the last 11 years. You know, after I lost my vision, you know, like just to go back to, you know, where Real Call started, you know, so many people influenced my life. So many organizations like the AFB that I'm currently working with, you know, mentors, they set aside their time and gave me their energy so that I can be where I am today, you know, where I can be an individual who is living his best life, right? And it's because people gave their time to me and helped me along the way. And so today, my mantra in life is help as many people as possible and create opportunities for them. So whether it's, you know, what I'm doing with my work, whether it's mentoring people on the side, or trying to make myself available to anything that's blindness or disability related as much as I can to give my time, because I just said, if 11 years ago, what happened to me when I lost my vision, someone told me that in a decade, you would be where you are today, I'd be like, get the hell out of my face. There's no way. I'm done. I'm going to be the guy, you know, like I'm going to be this blind guy sitting in, you know, next to a fireplace, rocking in a chair back and forth, right? That's going to be me. Nothing. I got nothing to live for. So today I think about that all the time. So when someone, you know, like when you guys, you know, contacted me and say, hey, do you want to do a podcast? I looked you guys up. I was like, well, yeah, absolutely. Because they help, you know, make the world more accessible for blind people. So I said, heck yeah, I'll do it. You know, so I just want to, you know, say help people and create opportunities as much as you can.
Those are great mantras to live by. I think that you have such a lasting impact on the imaging community around you and the wider world. So it's really nice to have you on the show, Amir. And thanks so much for doing this for us. And thank you everyone for listening in on today's episode. We'll be back with another episode very, very soon.